This is Harry Murray at Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia. Let's do our podcast for October. The brook trout, of course, are spawning in the mountain streams in October, November, and December. So most of us feel it's best not to fish for them while they're spawning, even though we plan to return them to the stream. But we just don't like to stress them in that. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to talk about some of two, especially nymph tactics that I learned from a real special friend, Charlie Brooks, out in West Yellowstone, Montana. If you have access to some used books, try to find the book that Brooks published, Nymph Fishing for Larger Trout, and that was published in 76. That is still ahead of time for the way most people are nymph fishing today, and it was a masterpiece, and I fished with Brooks a whole lot in the 70s and 80s, and I learned a tremendous amount from him. All right, let's look at the first technique I want to show you, and I use this here in the east. I use it in the west. It's basically upstream dead drift nymphing. Now, the requirement on the upstream dead drift nymphing is that we can see that strike in our indicator system. The floating indicators don't do the job. I use the bright butt leader that we have, the 9-foot bright butt leader, and then I put two scientific angler indicators. When Howard West was running SA, these were some indicators that we came up with that I especially like because you can see them under the water, you can see them on top of the water. The second technique I'm going to show you about here, I rely on these strongly. So the mechanics of this thing, you're fishing upstream, dead drift. That means it's coming back to you just as if it was the real thing. It doesn't mean you're not imparting action. It means it's drifting back naturally, just like the real nymph was cut loose from the bottom of the stream. I have done this hour after hour on the Yellowstone River just upstream from Livingston using big nymphs like a Bitch Creek in a 6, the Murray's Roadkill in a 6, that guy, 6 or 8, and they are very, very effective in those heavy runs. And this is the upstream dead drift nymphing. All right, how do I do this thing? I'm casting upstream never more than 30 feet. I'm going to get there anyway. So why make a long cast, miss the strike, and then when you get there, you wouldn't get it. So I'm wading upstream, casting almost straight upstream or possibly up and across maybe a 10-degree angle. When I come forward on that presentation cast, as that line is turning over in the air, I have a tight line over the finger of my rod hand with my left hand, and I'm taking up all of that slack, so when that fly lands on the water, I've got a tight line on it from my line hand all the way down to the nymph. Then it's going to settle down into the stream bottom, and I'm going to strip it back down to me at the same rate the current is pushing it. I'm going to watch. See, now I've got those two SA indicators on there. I'm going to watch the closest indicator to the fly that I can see. Could be the bottom one, could be the top one. They'll be maybe 4 or 6 feet apart. And I'll be watching the bright butt of the leader. So I'm watching this in order to see when the trout picks it up. What is going to happen? Somebody will say it darts. No, it doesn't dart. It stopped drifting because the trout put it in his mouth. He's not running with it like he would have eaten a nightcrawler. So he picks it up, it stops, and then I set the hook quickly with both my line hand and the rod. Just as quickly as you can. You've only got about a second or second and a half. He's going to spit that thing out, and it's not so much of a matter of we missed the strike. We got the strike and missed it because we weren't fast enough. Many times, if you're not tight all the way down to those indicators, you won't even know you get the strike. So you miss being aware of the strike. I would rather strip that thing just a little bit too fast, which may rob me of some depth, than strip too slowly and have sort of a candy cane loop in my leader. He picks it up and spits it out, and I don't even know he's been there. So that's Brooks's upstream dead drift nymphing. I use it here all over the mountain trout streams, up in the Adirondacks, Au Sable, Chateauguay, all of those up there, North Branch of the Saranac. We've had wonderful fishing on the North Branch of the Saranac with this system. So this is a very, very effective technique. Now, the second thing I wanted to talk to you about was the one in Charlie's book. He has referred to it as the Brooks Method. And I've been on hole number two with him behind the barns on the Madison, hour after hour, watching him do this. Brooks didn't like the lines we had, so being the nut that he was, he made his own. He made up a 30-foot head sometime out of lead core trolling line, and that thing went to the bottom like an anchor. Well, most of the water I'm fishing, I'm not fishing water quite that heavy. Now, hole number two, back of the barns, yes, you probably do need Brooks's method. I can see him right there doing it. But I use a floating line, so I don't confuse you with the two systems. I call mine swing nymphing. Now, what I do in swing nymphing, I go to this when the water's too deep to do the upstream dead drift. If I can't get out in there in that deep water and do upstream dead drift nymphing, that's when I go to swing nymphing. Now, the criteria is I set myself up right beside the deep run where I suspect the fish will be holding. Could be 6, 8, 9 feet deep right beside me. My first cast is made up and across stream at a 45-degree angle, probably about a 20-foot cast. It's almost upstream, but I want this thing to drift right back down beside me, maybe 5, 8 feet out from where I'm standing. So I'm casting up and across. As soon as that thing gets in the water, I'm going to let it sink all the way to the bottom of the stream on a slack line. Never mend here. You'll get slack line. You won't know you get strike. Up and across at that angle, watch these two SA indicators. The first one's down. Anybody that's been in my class, you've heard me right behind you on your shoulder saying, well, now the first one down. Now let's see the second one down. You're down in there real deep. Once you have good depth with your flies, then get tight to that with your line hand. Rod goes up in the air out over the stream at about a 45-degree angle, and you swing the rod downstream at the same rate the fly and the nymphs drift right along the bottom. This will enable you to feel the strike, set the hook, and you're home free. Now, second cast would be maybe a little further out, still basically a 45-degree angle out, but maybe 2 feet further. Let that thing sink down to the bottom. Once you can't even see any of those indicators, take a slack up with your line hand, rod out over the stream, get tight to it with your line hand, and then you pivot. Now, I actually turn my body and swing that thing downstream as the nymph is drifting downstream, and I have a tight line from my line hand all the way down to that nymph. It's going to the leader and line are going to look like they're in a belly, but you're tight to them. I've had beginners just mop up using this system because they're going to feel the strike. This is a much easier technique, actually, than upstream dead drift nymphing, because here you're going to feel the strike. All you've got to learn to do is get control of that line, stay tight to it, and zap, you can set the hook on them right away. So I use this technique on the streams in Montana. I use it up in the Adirondacks. I use it on the streams here in Virginia. Between these two systems that Brooks is talking about, dead drifting and swing nymphing, there's hardly anything you can't do with your nymphs. Now, of course, on the smaller streams here in the east, I'm not using a Bitch Creek nymph size 8. I'm going down to, say, a size 12, Murray's Black Stonefly, Murray's Professor nymph, that type thing. But that is a very effective system, and it'll let you catch trout other places that you can't come close to it. If you have any questions on this, just ring me back at the phone here at the fly shop, which is 540-984-4212. Thank you very much. Now, let's look at the smallmouth bass fishing that we can expect to October. Many of the old-timers around Edinburgh, where I grew up in the 50s, caught most of their large bass in the month of October. We used to have a contest here in the town of Edinburgh about who could catch the biggest bass and all that type thing. And almost always it was in October. Now, the old timers really like to use live bait. Few of them were doing plug casting. None of them were fly fishing. But they used to use a live bait. Hog suckers were probably top of the list. Live bluegill were excellent, and the darter minnows. These were all what they used when they were all bait fishing here on the North and South Fork of the Shenandoah River. When I got out of school, I graduated from school in 62 and started my fly shop in 62. So I got into flies that would both look like these live bait the old timers were using and act like those in the water. So I developed what I referred to as the Magnum Streamer series. These were all size four flies, and they're big flies. The Magnum Hog Sucker is very, very effective. Fished along the gravel bars along the bank where it drops off into the deep part of the river. And the bass kind of crash back in there and get them, and they also feed on them when they drop right off into the deep water. Way I like to do is from the middle of the stream, kind of cast back up on those gravel bars and strip it, fly out my Magnum Hog Sucker now I'm talking about. Strip it out so it drops right off that edge, and the bass usually hit it right along the drop-off. Recently, I was fishing on a friend's farm right here on the North Fork. I was fishing down the middle of the river, fishing both banks a little bit. Well, in this particular case, I was fishing river left, and I heard this commotion on a gravel bar behind me on river right. Look back here, and here a smallmouth bass had chased a hog sucker up on this gravel bar that was probably about 4 to 5, 6 inches deep. Chased him up there, and here the hog sucker was flopping around, and the bass, all I saw, the wake of the bass. I never really did see how big that bass was. The hog sucker didn't like being grounded on that gravel bar, and he flapped back in. Boom, that big bass nailed him right on the spot. So the hog sucker has always been a very effective bait, and it really is one of my best streamers. Now, a lot of the time, the Magnum darter is very effective when fished in below the riffles. These are big, strong minnows, strong swimming minnows. I cast the Magnum darter across stream and let it sink deeply, and then swim it back across the stream bottom. I strip in about 6 inches every 6 to 10 seconds, and that is very effective. Now, the bluegill, one of my old fellows I used to tag along and watch him fish. Will down here in town, I was tagging along. I was probably about 7, 8, 10 years old at the time, and he was fishing with my live minnows. And he said, "Harry, how about taking my minnow bucket and going back to the spring there in Edinburgh in my minnow box, and on the right-hand side, go in there and get me some more of those darter minnows." So I go back to Mr. Will's spring, unlock his minnow box, and I couldn't remember whether he told me to get on the right or the left. Well, I got on the wrong side. And that thing was full of young sunfish, bluegills especially. Even in those days, they were illegal, but the old-timers used them as bait. Now, I fish the Magnum bluegill in close to the bank in water 2 to 4 feet deep and in the tail of the islands. It is very effective just to swim it right along those areas. Usually the strike will come within maybe 5 feet of the bank or 5 to 10 feet below the tail of these islands. But these flies that mimic the real minnows that the old-timers used and minnows the bass are feeding on today are very, very effective. Thank you very much.